This is Long Shots, VSiN's premier golf betting podcast. Here's Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, and Kelly Bidlin.
All right, welcome into Long Shots. No Matt Brown this week, so guess what? It's just a Kelly and Wes edition. Feels like it's fall golf again, Wes. How you doing?
I'm doing all right, man. How are you? Very exciting weekend for everybody.
Oh, man. Great weekend of golf. You and I were just talking about it before. I think between, a million guest spots leading up to it for both of us. I'm sure you far more than me. But then even just talking about it the past couple days, I'm a little tired of talking Masters. But, man, you know what? Rory McIlroy got home. A couple winners on the pod for me and Matt. I know you got in on them live. And, man, just throughout the winters, what a tournament. I mean, that is one of the best golf tournaments I have seen in my lifetime, period. I don't know about you, but it was, It was just Thursday through Sunday, every round. It was nail-biting, amazing, amazing golf to watch.
I was trying to think of where I would rank it. We all remember the 2019 Masters where you had that massive pack, and once Molinari and Finau went in Race Creek, Tiger Woods, here he comes, and he finishes it off and wins in 2019. God, that seems like it's 20 years ago this point. But at the 86 Masters, of course, Jack Nicklaus at 46. There have been some great U.S. Opens. The Open in 09, of course, at Turnberry, where it looked like 60-year-old Tom Watson was going to be the oldest man ever to win a major championship and lost in the playoff to Stuart Sink. So, yeah, this was right up there, because I had somebody ask me about that in a radio interview I did on Monday and said, yeah, this has got to be top five. This has got to be one of the best with all the twists and turns and then the payoff at the end. The story got finished at the end. Rory McIlroy finally captures the career Grand Slam after trying since 2015. So the 11th time, I guess, was the charm. And you had so many just ups and downs, I think, really, for Rory. And that was just in the final round, because it looked like at one point, you know, if you're looking at the social media or looking at your Twitter or whatever it is during the television coverage, and then you start seeing the Vince Carter dunk contest, it's over. It's over. You start seeing that when he got up to a 5-shot lead. I'm like, man, I've been down this road before. This is, I don't know how it's going to get tighter. I didn't think it was going to get that tight, but it's going to get tighter. He's not going to run away and win this by 7-8 shots like he did at the U.S. Open at Congressional all those years ago. There's going to be something happen, and what happened was on the 13th, he actually makes a sensible decision, but a decision he doesn't often make. He lays up on a par 5. Rory McIlroy never lays up on a par 5. Never. And he's like, I'm going to be sensible here, because Rory, I think that's one of the things about him. When he gets, in this kind of a big event, he gets a little conservative maybe with this play. And he has an 86-yard wedge and hits one of the worst wedges you ever saw into the water, gets a double bogey. Loses the lead. He lost the lead, by the way, early in the first round or final round with the double on the first. He had a 5-shot advantage going to Amen Corner, got that break on 12 where it didn't go into the water. So you're like, okay, now he's to the par 5. Just get up. Just don't do any damage. Just make a 5 and you're okay, and you still are going to have a 3 or 4 shot lead. And unbelievable. And then the shots that he hit, he made that birdie on 16, and then the shot he hit on 17, the 2 feet. He hit so many incredible shots, Kelly.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Like, is this guy really going to lose hitting those kind of shots? And credit to Justin Rose, man. He never gave up. He was the one that fought, because everybody kind of fell by the wayside. Mm-hmm. Bryson fell by the wayside. Scheffler never really got going. Some of those guys that were like at 500-600, Connors, and those guys never really did much. Ludwig kind of hung in the fight for a while until he went bogey triple on the final two holes. But Justin Rose, man, I got to give him a lot of credit, man. What a fighter. He kept fighting, because he, I think, was 7 back after 10 holes. Rory was at 14 under through 10 holes, and Justin Rose, I think, was 7 under, and managed to get into a playoff where it's like, oh my God, this is going to happen again. And Rose once again hits a good shot on the playoff hole, but it rolls by 10 feet, and then Rory just stiffs it to like inside 3 feet. So, Justin Rose, once again, a bridesmaid at the Masters twice now. And also once to Sergio, by the way, in 2017, and then also twice at the Open, he was a runner up. So, Rory finally, makes history, you know, joins Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods, Ben Hogan, Gary Player, Gene Sarazen as winners of the career Grand Slam. So now the question going forward with Rory, even though that's not going to be answered this week, he is not in the field for this week's RBC Heritage. What's it going to be, you know, for Rory? Is he going to, you know, say, hey, I got this off my back now. There's no pressure. Now I can just go play. And then he's going to win a couple, you know, a few more, where I think the benchmark of winning 10 majors when you've won five, I think that's realistic. It's unrealistic to catch Jack and Tiger, I think, because injuries are going to happen and because there's going to be other great players come along and there's just so much more competition. Or does Rory have complacency and contentment? He's like, you know what? I finally did it. I tend to think it's more of the former. I still think he's a pretty driven guy.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think it's funny you bring it up because I caught was it Patrick Harrington on the Golf Channel. I don't know if you saw this interview or not, because Rory's tough for me. I don't, Wes, I think you back him more than anybody on this pod. Usually this was the rare week where we're heading into the tournament. It was me and Matt on him. I feel like I never bet the guy. Honestly, I'm very hot and cold when it comes to Rory, just his personality and stuff. I always have respect for his game. I will always have respect for the position that he was put in as basically to be the flag bearer for the PGA Tour amongst the PGA and LIV split. And then you had Monahan go and basically be like, all right, well, we're going to go work out a deal with LIV. You know, and he basically it felt like always the whole time left Rory on this island of like being the guy that had to always carry the torch, carry the flag for the PGA Tour. So I got a lot of respect for him for that. But man, he can be kind of cheesy sometimes too. And it was like, I don't know how many times I heard him after. I was like, the line was great once of like, what are we all going to talk about when it comes to next year's Masters? I heard him say that, and I don't know how many interviews, Wes. Like, it was like he reused that line like four times. Like, I don't know how many times he had it prepared. And I saw Patrick Harrington bring it up, and he's like, I don't know what Rory's talking about. This talk's never going to stop because the more majors you just continue to win, we're just going to have the more majors conversation and how many can he win? Mm-hmm. And I'm with you. I don't really think... and Patty said this too. It's one of those like his. I don't think his game's going anywhere. Like, sure, as he's reaching his mid 30s, you're talking about one of the longest guys on the tour off the tee. When you're talking about what his game's like, every year we're gonna have some of these younger guys come up and be a story in golf. But like, there's Rory's game isn't fading away anytime soon.
Yeah. So like, I think 10 is still realistic. Yeah. I'm not projecting him to get to that, but I think it's very much realistic. You know, people asked that a few years ago about Brooks. Is he going to get to 10? And I said, well, 10's a lot. You know, you're dealing with injuries and, you know, the fact that he doesn't have the win equity at other things, I think that Rory McIlroy does. Keep in mind, Rory, that last major was what, 2014 Valhalla PGA Championship in Louisville. Ever since then, yeah, he hadn't won a major, but he had won like 28 times around the world. So you're averaging about 2.5 wins a year. So it's not like the guy fell off the planet Earth.
Yeah.
He was consistently winning. He just wasn't winning at the majors. So, you know, 10, I think, could be realistic. Look, you're getting into 14 and 18 with Tiger and Jack. I think that's probably a little much, but he's already at least, I think, become the best European player ever. Like, he passed Faldo, he passed Seve, so he probably, if you're ranking him all time, you know, top 10 to top 12, maybe that second group, not in that first group with some of the other Slam winners, and then throwing in Arnold Palmer in there, but he's in that group. Like, I think he is past Phil, at least, you know, because there was that argument, is like, has he passed Phil? I think, I'm like, absolutely, he has, no question.
To me, he has. Yeah, I want to go over a couple other takeaways from the Masters. I know most people have come here for more bets for this upcoming week. There's always something to bet next, right, Wes? And that's what we're all focused on. So I do want to get onto the RBC Heritage, but a couple things quick. You did a great breakdown of Rory, especially in that final round. But man, I'll tell you, even just that, the whole tournament, I don't know if I've ever seen a combination of so many great shots and so many bad shots. It was head scratching with that. And then a couple other quick notes. I can't believe Bryson faded away. I thought he looked all week like he was ready to put up a fight. And Sunday, I was a little stunned that he really just faded away. Because like you said, I don't really know that Rory was feeling a ton of other pressure from some of the other guys. It was just his pressure, the pressure he was putting on himself, basically.
Yeah.
But I really expected Bryson to make some noise. And then Ludwig tried. He tried. I guess he tried his best. And I think that's probably a good, I think it's probably a good example of where Ludwig fits at in the golf landscape right now, right? Like, I expect him to be a monster. I expect him to be a monster this season. It's just, are you right there at the top with the rest of these guys yet? No, you're not quite there yet, Ludwig.
He's still young.
But you're
right
on the doorstep, yeah.
He's still learning, and you know, maybe he has to go through a little of this major championship pain before he gets there. But yeah, what you said about Bryson I think was true, because I felt like it was more in previous, and obviously the U.S. Open, even though they weren't paired together, you know, Rory gave it away and Bryson had to go take it, so credit to him for that. But I felt like Bryson, when he came on the scene and he was so long off the tee, Bryson was a little bit more in Rory's head, I think, because Rory became obsessed with the distance and all of that. And certainly, you know, hits it out there just as far with him. But at the end of the round, hearing Bryson's comments, it was almost like Rory was in Bryson's head. Like, they shook hands on the tee, exchanged pleasantries, but he's like, yeah, Rory never said a word to me. Well, that's very reminiscent of Tiger. Tiger wasn't exactly chatty Cathy in these majors. And we know Tiger and Rory are very good friends. And, you know, and Rory, I think, looks up to him a little bit as a mentor, I would say. And Rory was steely-eyed. He was focused, you know, because I think he was feeling so much internal pressure, because it was not only winning the Masters, it was not only winning the career Grand Slam, but I think he wanted to beat Bryson's ass, too, because Bryson got him at the U.S. Open last year. And I was on Rory in that one. So, you know, I felt that pain a little bit too. Rory should have won at Pinehurst. Rory probably should have won the U.S. Open the year before at L.A. Country Club that Wyndham Clark ended up winning. Just never could make a putt. So, you know, he was focused, I think, I've got to finish this off.
Yeah, I think the other part of that too is, like, I mean, I hope it keeps going, because I think it's a great rivalry for golf, right? Where it's whether we all might think this way in 5 years, who knows, but there's no end in sight. I mean, this was really Captain PGA versus Captain Liv, right? Like, these are the two guys that have basically been the spokesmen from both of those tours from day one. So I thought that was a great subplot. Of course, I don't feel like the broadcast brought it up barely, like, ever, but it's like, so
obvious. No, they weren't going to address
it. It's so obvious. Yeah, like,
they weren't going to address it.
It's part of the drama. Okay, a couple other gambling notes just to take away from the tournament, Wes, and I want to get your final takeaways. I wrote this down right away after Thursday, and then I made another note after Sunday. This is basically like, what was the draft movie called? Draft Day? Is that what it was called? Remember, Koster writes down a little note, no matter what, I'm
doing. Bo Callahan.
Bo Callahan was the quarterback. He wanted the linebacker.
He wanted
right?
the running back, Mac, or whatever his name was.
Yeah, whatever it was. Now we're screwing up the reference. But the I basically made that note. It said, no matter what, I'm betting Rose first round leader and Patrick Reed top 20 at the Masters. Because it's ridiculous, man. We're talking five times now. Rose has led after the first round. That is one of the most incredible stats I've ever heard in golf betting. And I think I brought this up on Long Shots last week when we were recording. Yeah, I did. And shout out again to Pat Mayo, does great work. Me and you both use the site. He dropped this note last week that if you go back to when Scheffler won his first Masters, the most profitable single bet you could make every year is Patrick Reed top 20. Well,
yep.
Dude finishes third. He's right there again. So that streak only continues as well.
He was on my outright card, and there was actually one chance he had to tie. Now, he would have had to hole out at 18 from the fairway. He had one chance, but Patrick Reed played very well. By the way, Patrick Reed now in the top 50 in the world golf ranking, so I think that gets him in. That's going to get him in good shape for the rest of the majors, because, you know, I was like, man, this guy picked up a ton of world ranking points here. So Patrick Reed played very well, and certain guys, you know, even guys that weren't in contention, that just Augusta National, if you play well, you're going to always play well. Bubba Watson. Mm-hmm. Bubba Watson was damn near knocking on the door for the top 10. You know, Max Homa, whose game had been nowhere and maybe figured out something. Maybe he's somebody to watch in the next month going forward as we go to Quail Hollow for the PGA. But, yeah, that's what I've kind of learned is, like, you know, course form and recent form, as much as we get into the stats, and we still should continue to do that, form always matters, because the guy that was playing the best golf this year won the Masters. That was Rory. And the guy that was playing the best golf last year, Scottie Scheffler, leading in, won the Masters. Rahm the year before. And then Scottie the year before. The guys that were playing the best and maybe had a win going in, at least one win, they're going to be short prices, but you got to back them in some kind of way.
I think it's a great point, and it's probably where we can transition off the Masters. But it's yeah, these guys that you have historical, that we know play well at the historical trends, play well at the Masters, great. Look at them in placement markets, look at them in matchups, that sort of thing. You want someone that's going to go win the Masters, you want to pick an outright bet, you got to lean more on recent form. I think it's absolutely perfectly said, Wes. Okay, transition on. Let's go win some more money. No rest for the PGA Tour, because we go right over to the RBC Heritage, which, yes, is a signature event,
folks. I know. And by the way, before we go on, I hate that it's a signature event. This used to be one of my favorite, like, just boilerplate PGA tournaments, because I like this course a lot.
I feel like you have hit here often, or is it just my imagination?
I like that, too. And okay, I like that as well when we do well on an event. But I don't like that it's a signature event right after the Masters. I really don't. I like the fact you always would have a couple guys at the top end that would play this event because they like the course, or they're based down there in the Southeast, whatever reason, they would play. But now, man, it feels like some of these guys, they're being forced to play here this week.
Yeah.
Because it's a signature event when they would probably be taking that week off, like Rory and Matsuyama are.
Yeah. No, I think it's absolutely true. I don't care that it's a signature event or not a signature event. I just don't think we should have a signature event after a Masters. I think after a major period, but especially after the Masters. I think we've talked about it on the pod earlier this year. To me, if you're going to do this, do it before the week before the Masters. I'd rather have like that, you know, it's almost like a fight card, right? Like give me like a nice fun tournament before the major, right? Get me warmed up and ramped up for golf. Like we've been seeing all week all these record TV ratings and stuff for the Masters. Well, like it ain't going to be the same for the RBC Heritage. Like, yeah, some of that love might carry over a little bit, but there's not a direct correlation between those two things. So anyways, top of the odds board here, we got Scottie Scheffler. He is playing plus 360. Again, as much as Wes and I are hating on this, this is a signature event, big-time money on the line, big-time FedEx Cup points. So the guys that, as long as you're not completely burnt out from the Masters or injured and need a week off, you're coming here to play. So no Rory, he wins. I think Decky's the only other top 30 guy right now in the field. Right at the top of the board, Scheffler plus 360, Morikawa 11-1, this is all over at DraftKings. Xander Schauffele, who did look a little better last week, 12-1. Ludvig Åberg, 12-1. Patrick Cantlay and Justin Thomas, 18-1. Corey Connors, 22-1. Everybody else, 25-1 or longer. Wes, real quick, we got 70. I think we're down to 71 guys now in this field. No cut. We are over to Harbortown. If you are looking at course, this is a par 71, about 7,200 yards. You lose a par 5 here, basically. It's one of those par 71s. Fairway width, we're about 33 yards wide. Rough is out to 1.5 inches of rye grass this year. You got 9 water danger holes, 51 bunkers. You got Poa Trivialis on the greens and very small greens, the second smallest greens we will see throughout the PGA Tour season, Pebble being the smallest that you get every single year. Those are just the basics. Wanted to set it up for you, Wes. Give us the rest of the course breakdown, though, and what stuck out to you.
Yeah, par 71, 72-13, so a shorter course. It's coastal, but it's tree-lined for most of the courses. A dog leg, narrow sight lines off the tee. It is a peat dye design, so you know, if you look at what peat dye is, it's risk-reward golf. So you do have, you know, even though you don't have a ton of bunkers here, you do have water and you do have trouble. He wants you to hit more toward the trouble off the tee, because that actually sets up an easier second shot. If you play on the safe side, away from the trouble, it actually is the more difficult approach shot. So it's kind of like pick your poison here. Most of the early of the holes actually play inland, and you know there's natural woods. It's a residential housing development, several courses around the area. But everybody that recognizes this place recognizes 17 and 18. 17 is that par three, and you have the Calabog Sound in the background. And then 18th is famous because we all know the lighthouse, that 90-foot lighthouse on the back of 18. And you got that really wide fairway that is still very difficult. I think it's like 75 yards wide, but it's still difficult due to because there's no wind exposure. And you have water all up and down the left side. So that's why you think, oh, man, this fairway is so easy to hit. You should birdie this hole. But not necessarily because of those factors. So, you know, if you're looking at course correlations, some Pete Dyes, I think, would be in order. River Highlands, where they play the Travelers. TPC Sawgrass would be another one where they, of course, play the Players. And then looking at maybe some non-dye designs that are a little bit coastal, like Pebble Beach, like Sea Island, where they play the RSM late in November. Wileye, where they play the Sony Open. So if you were looking for comp courses, I think that was the way to go. In recent years, Scottie Scheffler, of course, the defending champion here last year, 4-1, the shortest shot to hit here, I think, basically. And when I monitored this all the way back to 2010, he was by far the shortest price. And I have hit on a couple of these. I've hit on Matt Fitzpatrick before here, Wesley Bryan, couple of those guys in the mid-2010s. I hit on here. So
you hit on Wesley Bryan here? Jesus.
Yeah, that was many years ago. He was 66-1. I think is where I got him, and have had a couple losses in the playoff. I had Cantlay in the playoff a couple years ago when he lost, and then Fitz beat Spieth in the playoff that year before having him. So, yeah, this is a you know, this has been out there for a lot of years. This course has been around, I think, since 1967. Very small greens. You mentioned those greens. These are really super small greens. Yeah. Second smallest on the PGA Tour, 3,700 square feet. They're not super fast or super slow, probably about average, 11.5 on the stimp. But, you know, you're going to be forced on these dog legs. We'll get to that when we get to our stats. You don't hit driver a ton here at Harbortown.
Yeah. We'll dive right into it right now, Wes. I think off the tee, start there. It's look, about as different as it gets from Augusta a week ago, right? You are going to see driver not very often. This is fourth shortest driving distance you'll get on the tour. Driving usage at about 50%, so about half the shots you're going to take off the tee, you're clubbing down. You're not going with driver now. Yeah, it's what we call a positional track, right? You're trying to hit it to, like you said, into a certain spot on the fairway, set up that second shot into very small greens. This is eighth toughest course to gain on approach. Part of that reason, because you are dealing with the second smallest greens. Now, that naturally means this might not be the most difficult around the green course to play on, but with such small greens, you're going to miss more greens than you usually do. So something to keep in mind if you are doing your own stats and your own handicapping at home. Eighth toughest set of par threes on tour, so keep that one in mind. Par three scoring will be important this week, and then the proximity range is one that caught my eye. I think that with you having to club down, this is, you know, we bring this up almost every week. It's probably good to talk through real quick, Wes. We'll bring up some of these proximity ranges every week, but oftentimes it does depend on how much we're weighing them. Depends on what golfer you're looking at, because it depends on how long the guy's going to be off the tee usually with the driver. On a track like this, it's a little easier to dial in and weigh these proximity ranges more, because everybody's forced to hit the same distance off the tee or similar distances off of the tee because they have to take the driver out of their hands. So 150 to 200 yards make up about 50% of your approach shots, which is a massive number when we're looking at this type of stuff from week to week. So wanted to throw those couple out. As far as stats, I'll roll through mine real quick because it has a lot to do with a lot of that stuff I just went through. Good drives and driving accuracy was really the only thing I looked at off the tee. So looking for fairways, you can even hit it in the rough here. It's okay. It's not long rough. It's not super penal. Gives you a decent look still into the green. But that accuracy definitely helps. Again, positional, you're trying to get to a certain point on the fairway to set up a clean approach shot. This is a super, super heavy second shot course. So approach stats, super important this week. Heavy weighted strokes gained approach for me. Then the proximity 150 to 200 I mentioned. Also put opportunities gain. Look, you can score here. Just knowing that you're dealing with small greens too, I like to see who are the guys that are put opportunities gains, get a birdie opportunity with your approach shot 15 feet or in. And so I just like to look on that when we're dealing with small greens, Wes, just get an idea of, all right, well, who's putting it close? You know, because I need a guy. You know, if your strokes gain approach or greens and regulation numbers might be great, but you're talking about a much bigger greens, that affects the stat. So I want to know who's actually putting it really close to the pin. So I did weigh that. There's only three par fives here, but you got to score on at least two of them. So I did weigh par five scoring a little bit. And then just a little bit on the following, scrambling around the green, bogey avoidance, and then just pure strokes gained putting. Weighed them all pretty small, scrambling more than the rest of those because you are going to have to do a little bit more of that around this course. But that was pretty much everything I looked at with very heavy emphasis on approach. How about you,
Brian? Yeah, the only thing I did differently, it was mostly the same, but I used good drives gained. I thought that or maybe total driving might be the best thing to look at because you don't need to look at distance, I think, all that much. And, you know, accuracy is included in some of these stats. So I did that. I did a little scoring stat, a random strokes gained par four, 400 to 450, because six of the 11 par fours are all in that range. I did strokes gain on courses less than 7,200 yards. So if you want to term that as like less than driver or however you want to term
short
that,
courses
I did,
or whatever,
I did that. And then I did some Pete Dye history here as well. You know, wanted to see the guys that play well on a, you know, cause you have several Pete Dye courses, by the way, that may not be exactly a facsimile of what you get at Harbortown, but you have several Pete Dyes every year. Of course, you have, you know, River Highlands, I mentioned, Sawgrass, the stadium course at PGA West, TPC Louisiana, where I believe they're going to be next week for the Zurich Classic in New Orleans, and then some major championship courses, Whistling Straits, Kiwa, which is hosted the PGA, Crooked Stick, which is in the rotation back where I'm from, near Carmel, Indiana, for the BMW. Austin Country Club, I know they don't have the match play anymore, but that is a Pete Dye design. All these guys have played that event, or at least most of them. So I did want to take into a little bit of Pete Dye scoring, but other than that, yeah, this is going to be very, very important on approach. Scottie Scheffler, by the way, led the field on approach like he did every week because I think he led the entire year on approach last year. So I think approach is the first thing that you definitely want to look at depending on how knee deep in the weeds you want to go. And then I combined a little scrambling and around the green, even though it's a little bit easier. Like the lies really aren't that tricky necessarily on these dome shaped greens.
You're gonna miss
these greens because they're for 3,700 square feet. So I don't care how good your approach and your ball striking is, you're probably gonna have to chip in or putt off the green at some point. So yeah, you want to keep these this short game very, very tidy.
Yeah, the only other one I'll add with that was small greens, because I usually bring this up pretty often. Whenever we're dealing with really small, I didn't punch it in this week. I just went with overall bogey avoidance because I think it is a little bit of a good replacement stat. But whenever we're dealing with really small greens or really big greens, I usually like to look at three-putt avoidance because you can't be three-putting on really small greens or else you're screwed. So I think that's another one I would consider. I didn't use any of it, though, this week. I just went for regular bogey avoidance. Before we get into bets, by the way, we're also going to talk Corrales Punta Cana because I know Wes does have a write-up going up on VSiN.com for that and has some bets ready to fire. We, as usual, all of our bets will be up at VSiN.com. Mine are already up there, actually. I want to talk through, though, before we get to the bets, just top of the board here and, I don't know, feelings on each one of these guys this week. Scheffler plus 360, Colin Morikawa 11-1, Xander and Ludvig both 12-1. I guess I'll stop it there because once we get to Cantlay, the tournament history here is what's pushing his odds as short as they are. I think if you know how well Patrick Cantlay's played here before, that's the biggest reason why, more so than recent form. But Scheffler, look, man, the stats are still so good. I know the results are not what we've all come to expect over the past, you know, couple years from Scotty, because he's not winning every other week. Thank God it actually lets us win. I've hit three outrights this year, Wes. It's amazing what happens when Scotty Scheffler doesn't win every other week. Anyways, I don't know, with this field with only 71 guys, I've seen 4-1, 4.5-1 on Scheffler. I feel like I'd say this almost every week. I can't blame you if you want to go bet Scotty, though. If that wanted to be your one outright and then leave it alone, guess what? He was my top-rated guy this week, just like he usually is every week. I would have no problems with anybody doing it. I didn't personally. Any thoughts on Scheffler from you?
I didn't play him, but he did win this thing last year, the week after he won the Masters, which is like, oh, my God, that's impossible. You're not going to win the week after you win a major championship, and he did. And I think he won, by a couple strokes, and his margin actually was a little bit bigger because I remember they had that little rain delay. Then it's like, okay, there's a couple guys kind of close. They had to finish on Monday, I believe, here, if memory serves me correctly, last year. But, yeah, he went ahead and won this thing last year. So, you know, there's no reason to think he can't do it again, even though I'm not going to pay a 4-1 to find out.
Yeah, yeah. The Morikawa, just going to keep rolling down. Morikawa 11-1. Look, man, I think last week even backed up more where I'm at with Morikawa right now. He is one of my top-rated guys once again this week. He is, I think, third in most of my models that I ran, maybe even second. He's awesome. He's incredible. The game's great. I just got questions for betting him outright right now. I really do, and his closing ability. I don't know where he's at with that right now. Maybe it's a little unfair of me, Wes, but I got no problems with you want to bet Morikawa. I would be sticking to top tens and stuff like that on him, even though I did lose that bet last week.
Yeah, I felt bad for even playing him this week. By the way, he is on the card, 11-1. It's like I'm betting him at this number. You know what? I had to have my head examined, but he was disappointing. Was never really in it over the weekend. T14, but I dug into the numbers. He was third overall in strokes gained ball striking off the tee and approach, just behind the two guys that were in the playoff.
He's been
McIlroy
awesome.
And Rose. So yeah. You would think this course, too, would be perfect for him, even though he's never really been right there to win the thing. I think he's got two top tens here over the last, like, 3 or 4 years. But, like, this is a perfect course for him, where his power disadvantage is a little bit negated, and he'd just be a ball striker. That's what this is, a ball striker's course, and that should be right in his wheelhouse. So he did make the card of the short guys this week.
I mean, the approach numbers are ridiculous. I mean, that is what he's done. I mean, they're always ridiculous, but especially the past 3 weeks, the Masters, the Players, Arnold Palmer, what he's gaining on approach, and that's what's going to matter so much this week. It really is incredible. This is a course that should be perfect for him. Finished ninth last year. He's got a T7 here as well. So, I can't blame you. You know me, I love Morikawa. Can't knock you for betting that one for sure. Just going back to the betting board here, if Kelly can figure out actually how to, direct and talk at the same time. Okay. So Xander next, what do we make of Schauffele? I don't think we're going to. When we brought this up last week, right? I think we've probably missed that chance now of buying low on Schauffele. I don't think the books are willing to get burnt by him per se, but 12-1 in this field, it might still be long enough to play, but I think I got to see more first, Wes. How about you?
Yeah. Look, I think that he's probably going to win very, very soon. It could be this week. I did not bet him accordingly, but it seems like something's coming, you know, he's going to be right in the mix. Like we're thinking Quail Hollow, of course, next month at the PGA, where Rory, by the way, has won 4 times at the Wells Fargo, now Truist Championship on that course. And Schauffele has always played well there too. I think he lost to Wyndham Clark a couple years ago. I had him and Clark ended up winning. Xander, I think, is going to be starting to peak at the right time to defend that Wanamaker at the PGA. So it feels like he's getting close. He kind of hung in. He was never really in it to win or contend, but kept kind of getting progressively better, ends up eighth last week at Augusta.
Yep. Yeah, it was pretty impressive. I'm right there with you. I think I still got to see a little bit more of it first, but, man, it feels like it's coming, and it's coming quick with Xander. Ludvig? Really simple reason why I don't have any interest in playing him this week. I think Ludvig, you're going to see me play a lot this year. I love the kid. I think he's got so much talent. We already talked about it. I think he's really just that one step below kind of the cream of the crop players right now. But some of the shaky approach numbers right now, it's just when we talk about this course setup and how important that is, the approach stuff is a little concerning. Hasn't been super consistent with that. So at 12-1, good enough a reason for me to not play him. But any thoughts on Ludvig?
Yeah, I think Ludvig is probably going to win some kind of big event this year. I don't know if it's a major or not, but he's going to win, I think, soon. But did not play him this week. A little bit short. Just kind of, you know, he tried and maybe tried too hard, just fell apart a little late. I'm willing to excuse that, though.
Yeah.
At least long term, because it's like, hey, I got to take a freaking chance here. You know, I gotta somehow see if I can catch these guys. But Fitch finished seventh. Tough beat if you had a top five, by the way, on him. There's always a few of those at the Masters that maybe get ignored. 10th year on debut last year, so he's won the RSM before, so kind of a similar course. So I could see certainly the correlation, but did not play Ludvig this week.
Okay. All right, let's get to the ones we actually did play. So Morikawa won for you. What else did you end up betting, my friend?
Yeah, and I was down to a few. Like, I had to determine, okay, who, and I'll mention the ones that just barely missed. I almost played Shane Lowry, you know, because I kind of felt like, hey, man, he just saw his boy. And I'm going to use that as an angle for another player here momentarily. But, you know, his boy just finally accomplished the career Grand Slam. Maybe he's going to go on and be motivated and pumped up and have some feel good. I looked at him. I looked at Sepp Straka as well, who, by the way, was kind of on the periphery of contention here last year. Always considering Justin Thomas, because I think his game, even though he didn't really show out at the Masters, I think it's coming along. So, you know, certainly considered those guys, but those guys barely just missed. Also, Russell Henley barely just missed for me because he modeled out very high. I may regret this, but I played Patrick Cantlay at 20-1, who's got his own winless drought now 2.5 years. You would think if he gets off the schneid somewhere, it'd be here. Look at his form. Third, second, miscut, third, seventh, and third. So that's about as good as you can get without winning the darn thing. He's pretty good on Pete Dye courses as well. Always shows out, always up there on the total strokes gained for Pete Dye, which Scotty, by the way, leads. No surprise there. But Patrick Cantlay, 20-1. And I mentioned using an angle for another player. I'm going to use that Rory angle for Tommy Fleetwood at 33-1. After Rory got the big bear hug from his guy Shane Lowry, the player next to him was Tommy Fleetwood that greeted him. And, you know, Fleetwood's got his own, like, pursuit that he's trying to get. Rory was trying to get the Grand Slam. Tommy's just trying to win in America.
He's trying to win.
And win on the on the PGA Tour for the first time. 7 DP Tour World Tour wins, yet to win here. He didn't putt very well. He's T21 last week. He was third in strokes gained tee to green behind McIlroy and Patrick Reed. So that shows you he hit the ball pretty darn well. And this is a place where your ball striking, if it's good, you're going to contend. So maybe that gets the monkey off his back. Sungjae Im, I ended up playing at 40-1.
Ooh,
and
I don't
like to play the contenders or the guys that were kind of up there on the leaderboard at the Masters, because I think maybe they get a little bit, you know, you don't get a bargain in the price. But I think 40 is fair for Sungjae. Didn't really strike the ball very well until Sunday. It was his best ball striking day. 13th, 21, 7, and 12 in his last four visits here for the RBC Heritage. 3 top fives this season. He's trying to win for the first time in 3.5 years on the PGA Tour. He's won a Korean event or event on the Korean Tour each of the last 2 years. So Sungjae Im, 40-1, and then Daniel Berger, 50-1. T21 last week at the Masters, was 6th in greens in regulation, 3rd here at Harbortown in 2020. 3 PGA Tour victories, if you look at them, TPC Southwind in Memphis, Pebble Beach, Colonial. All shorter courses, which are a little bit less than driver and a little bit more technical that cater to ball strikers. So Daniel Berger, 50-1. I was wanting to find a long shot down the board. I was considering, by the way, and I'll play him in placements likely, Ryo Hisatsune, I think, is a guy that can really play well this week. Played very well at the Valero a couple weeks before the Masters, but I didn't really go bomb hunting. I haven't been able to accomplish that in many of these signature events.
Yeah, I think it's probably just a good strategy overall in the signature events. I'm with you. The old Rio. Rio's turned into one of those guys that I'm struggling to project, you know, and figure out and predict where he's going to, what he's going to do well and what he's not. Cause he's good enough that I'm no longer surprised when I see him up there on a leaderboard, but man, it feels like the consistency is just not there. Okay. As far as my bets, man, Wes and I only share one, although it looks like I bet everybody that Wes just left off his list. All right, Burger for me, I'm back to. This is, I kind of knew I wanted to bet Burger here even heading into the week for a lot of the reasons that you just said. If you're watching us on YouTube, thank you, and leave us a like, comment, whatever else you want to say to us below, go ahead, but appreciate it. We do run through some different graphics and stats and everything like that. Use it over at Rick Run Good right now. Burger, I'm back on as well. I played him outright and then a top 20. I think if you want to just focus on the top 20 market, that's fine, but you are talking about some great finishes this year. T21 Masters, T30 Valero, T20 The Players, T15 Arnold Palmer. If you're watching at home, you can see all of this. It's just been consistency, which we, you know, we've been kind of waiting on for Burger. Now, me and you have bet him enough that we're waiting for a W at some point. That would be great. But yeah, I'm on outright top 20 with him. He really does check all the boxes. Yes, some of the length off the tee is going to be mitigated here, but man, just for things that we're looking at, he's top 20 in the field from my ratings on approach, around the green, and putting. So that was big for me this week. Fourth in par five scoring, sixth in driving accuracy, first in good drives gained. I think that was really important. And he did finish T30 in this tournament. And every tournament this year was my note. I'm reading my wrong notes. Over the years here, T21 in 2022, T13 in 2021, and a T3 in 2020. So Berger, with the history here, with the stats coming in, I think that number, I got him at 50-1 in the outright. I thought that was a long number on him. Although the books are doing a great job of stealing my money on Burger every week. They're going to post a number like that in this field. I'm going to bet it basically every time. And so far, they're just taking my money. So good job on them. But yeah, so outright top, all my outrights I played a top five along with as well. So an outright top five and a top 20 on Burger for me. One other note, just from when it comes to my betting card, this week, Wes, I don't know about you. Some of the other bets that worked out really well for me last week, man, tournament matchups. I fired on a bunch for the Masters, went 5-1-1. And I thought to myself, you know what? This is the time we talk about, time of year we talk about almost every year on this pod, where it's okay, this is the time of year where we transition more into betting even more of our money on the top 20s and matchups and those type of markets, because we have so much more data to deal with. I don't know about you. I went through the tournament matchups real quick for this week. I didn't find a single one I liked.
Because you can make a case for all of them. Like, you see, like, Russell Henley against Tommy Fleetwood, I think is like -110 on each side. I can make a case for both those guys.
Yeah.
And both those guys, I think, are going to be pretty popular in the betting this week. Just looking, and I have limited in terms of you know, seeing maybe some of the guys that are getting backed a little bit. Sungjae's getting backed a little bit in the matchups. Davis Thompson is getting backed in the matchups. Of course, a guy that lives off Sea Island, so you would think he'd be familiar with this type of course playing there in that event. But was just trying to look and see, okay, who are some of the guys getting backed this week? And if anybody is like, really getting faded. I think in terms of, maybe a little bit to Wyndham against Justin Rose. Rose having come so close, but you know, Wyndham wasn't all that impressive necessarily last week. So yeah, I was trying to check to see if there were any of these guys that were like maybe really going to get faded off a Masters hangover, and not seeing a ton of that, at least as of yet, as we record this on Tuesday. Max Homa getting a little bit back though in a couple of his matchups. You know, I got to wait to see another week or two if Max is like really back. Like, I got my eye on him though for Quail Hollow because he has won there, and that's the best he played, and I'm thinking maybe he did find a little something.
Yeah, Rose is interesting because, man, my natural instinct would be to go fade him this week, too. I mean, what a marathon he had to endure for the Masters and another tease. But, like, frankly, this is a course that should suit his game pretty well.
You would think
so,
yes.
Yeah, it's not one I'm running to bet against. Okay, two other outrights for me. Man, I'm playing JT this week, Wes. I'm on Justin Thomas. Just the approach numbers are so good. And one of the things that's been holding him back is just him spraying some of these tee shots. And you're talking about all these guys having to club down. Good. Don't let Justin Thomas touch his driver. I'm fine with that right now with where his game's at off the tee with the driver. So I actually kind of like that angle this week. I found him in the mid-20s, 24 at one out there at a couple shops. I like that outright price on him. All I did was outright and top five. I'm not as confident in him this week. But man, I think there's something to that with him having to club down a little bit off the tee this week, and he's gained with the putter in three straight events, which I think is really important. That's usually a part of the game that we're worried about with him. So if the putter and approach and irons are working, okay, good enough for me. That's what I need here this week to get it done. Also T5 here last year, so it has done well at this course outright for me in a top five on Justin Thomas. And then I think the guy that is my favorite this week is Russell Henley. I played him outright top five and top 10. I went laddered all the way down to top 10 as well on Henley. That's where my biggest bet comes in at. He is, you talked about liking him, but man, top 20 in the field on all the approach stats I'm looking at. Really good in that 150 to 200 range that we were talking about. One of the most accurate guys off the tee on the tour. One of those things you don't have to worry about at all with him. Checked in at eighth around the green, seventh in bogey avoidance. Man, there's a lot to like here. I know he's coming off a missed cut. Okay, maybe gives him another day or two to get ready for this tournament. Doesn't have
he had a really good round, by the way, on Friday. That's why I considered him. I'm like, okay, that's good momentum. He just had a disaster on Thursday, and it's like, can you be willing to forgive one bad round?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And that was the last leave off for me, and that doesn't mean it'll be a leave off necessarily for like top 20 or perhaps a top 10. I think that's certainly a way to attack as well.
Yeah, and this is, look, you're talking about some great finishes this year. He's got four top 10 finishes already this season. And then course history, T12, T19, missed cut in T9 the last 4 years at this event. So Henley's played very well here before. He's my one and done pick for the week. And I am going outright top five and top 10 on him. And then, okay, getting down to some of the placement markets here. Corey Connors, I'm going right back to it, Wes. I'm playing a top 10 on Connors. This is another course that should fit him well. Another guy who rated out top 20 in approach, around the green, and putting. And he's another accurate guy off the tee. So he really checks all the boxes for everything I've been looking at. He's gained strokes basically everywhere the last 5 weeks, but especially on approach and around the green, the play has been really strong. In the results, T8 at the Masters, T18 at Valero, T8 at the Valspar, T6 at the Players, and third at the Arnold Palmer for a guy that was off the radar for me early in the season, Wes. Man, has he come on strong recently. And he's got some good finishes here, too. T12 and T22, T4 in 2021 and 2022. Man, it's hard to say that, right? T12 and 2022. Mm-hmm. Anyways, I'm right back on Connors at top 10. I'm not going to play an outright on him because we know he only wins at one course. But not that can't change.
Yes, he's kind of like a Canadian Russell Henley. And it's right. Like... he needs to win like a kind of a big time signature type event like Russell Henley did at the Arnold Palmer at Bay Hill last month, where that was the biggest win of his career. And, you know, you feel like Connors, he's got to get one of these, whether it's a signature event or one of the FedEx Cup playoff events, something that like says, you know, that matches his numbers and matches his stats for how good of a player he is.
Yeah, I'm with you. So I'm just going top 10 on him this week, but pretty heavily staked top 10 for me on Connors. I'm going to ride the hot hand while he's hot. Okay, top 20s. Played Berger in the top 20 market. I'm not sure if I mentioned that. I think I did. Other two that I played here. One more tournament, Wes. I'm going back to Straka. It's just the approach numbers are so damn good. Another guy like we're talking about with a bunch of these, right? Connor, Straka, Henley, Morikawa. Just accurate off the tee and great on approach. And that's what you're looking at this week for guys that you want to play. So, like, I'm not going as heavy as I've gone on him some of these other weeks. He was definitely My biggest loser last week, a guy who cost me the most money, was playing Straka, as much as I played him. But, man, the approach numbers are still so damn good. The par 5 scoring so good. I'm going to keep playing. And T5 and T3, past 3 years here, he's finished it with a missed cut mixed in. So we know he's played well here before. Man, the past two tournaments, I know, might be a little dissuading, but I'm going to ride with him on a top 20 bet one more time. And then one last one who will be a top 20 play for me, definitely a first-round leader play, the way his game goes. But, man, have you been looking at Tom Hoge recently, Wes?
Yeah, I was just about to say that, because I'm going to probably use him in placements this week. If just play the approach guys, man, maybe in like the placements this week, and you probably can't.
I think that's kind of what you're looking at, basic handicap for this course anyways, but there's something else going on with Tom Hoge right now. If you handicap golf, you know he always checks the boxes for being one of the best approach players on tour. But he's putting really well right now, and that is crazy. He's done it in 3 straight tournaments, and even the scrambling numbers have been up there for him too. So I couldn't have ignored that, and it's just the last 3 weeks. You're talking a T14, a T5, and a T3. He doesn't have great history here. He's played a bunch, but he was T18 last year. So, look, top 20, I'm just going to ride with that on Hoge. It gets dangerous with trusting all the other parts of his game sometime outside of approach. But I really love his approach numbers and what he's done here, what he's done recently with the putter. So going to play top 20 at plus 225 on Hoge, and we'll definitely be playing him in the first round leader market. Okay, that is RBC Heritage. Anything else on that one, Wes, before we transition over to the Corrales Punta Cana?
That's it for me, at least so far.
All right, Corrales Punta Cana, I am not going to have time to handicap this. Matt Brown out this week, by the way. I will be out next week over in Turks and Caicos enjoying some vacation time. So these two boys will take it from there. I was really planning on handicapping this. I got NBA work to do still, Wes. I don't know if I'm going to get there, so I'm going to end up trusting you. But, oh boy, are there some names that jump out to me right away at the top. If you like ball strikers, oh boy, Keith Mitchell, your short shot at 14-1. Alex Smalley, I've bet him a lot this year. I'm going to need Wes to tell me why he's not a good play this week. 18-1. He is second on the odds board. Harry Hall, 20-1. Seamus Power, 25-1. Rico Hoey, 28-1. Matt Wallace, who I've proclaimed before, is always the guy to watch out for in alternate event weeks, 28-1. As well, everybody else, 30-1 or longer. Wes, give us a quick breakdown. What are we looking at kind of at the course and the tournament?
Yeah, Corrales Golf Club in Punta Cana on the southeast tip of the Dominican Republic. Tom Fazio designed par 72, 76-6, 76-70. Second longest course. That doesn't mean it's just for bombers, though, but it's gettable for bombers and really superior ball strikers, but it turns into a putting contest. This is Paspalum on the greens, relatively slow, 11 on the stem, pretty average, smooth greens. There are 6 holes that play along the coast. There's some that play like inland and some that play along the coast, including 16 to 18. What do we have? The snake pit and the bear trap. Here we have the devil's elbow, Kelly.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's a good one.
Hole 16 to 18. Very comparable courses to like Grand Reserve, El Camaleon, Vedanta Vallarta, where you have the Mexico Open or the Puerto Rico Open, some of the other Mexico events, the Hawaii events. Billy Horschel, not the defending champion because he's playing at the RBC, won this at 20-1 last year, 23 under par. So you're looking probably high teens, low 20s for the winners. These are ones where I throw darts at and hope they hit the board. I don't do a lot of modeling for these things. I kind of go with gut. Chan Kim, 35-1, who actually played here last year. He finished 6th in this event last year, 5th 2 weeks ago at the Valero Texas Open. In this week's field, and I'm just talking to players in this week's field, if you go to like the rankings at PGAtour.com stats, 3rd in total birdies, 4th on approach. So this is a guy that can score. So Chan Kim, 35-1. And then our boy, our firebrand Argentine, Alejandro Tosti, at 40-1. 9th off the tee, 6th tee to green in this field. Big hitter off the tee, just attack it and hit it all over the place with reckless abandon. 5th in Houston, 12th in San Antonio, so he has been playing some good golf. Hayden Springer, 50-1. Missed the cut here last year. Big hitter off the tee, was 6th at Torrey Pines, 15th at Houston, which are two of the longer tracks these guys hasn't played all year, so he could flourish here. And then I'm going to go with talent here, even though the form hasn't been good. He's only made 3 of 9 cuts this year. Michael Chior-Borgensen at 60-1, the former U.S. Junior Amateur winner, who actually is on the PGA Tour this season because he got number one in PGA Tour U, which that's how Ludwig Aubert got on the tour last year. Fourth overall on the tour in driving distance. Everybody thinks he's a big-time future talent, a guy that played his college golf at Stanford, dropping class, think he could do well here. And then one triple-digit guy who actually has a decent finish on this course. I think he was eighth here in 2021. I went with Danny Willett, 125-1, made the cut at Augusta last week, finished T42, but he was second in the field for putting, so he putted really well.
He made the cut last week. I didn't even notice it once.
He did a lot of those former champions. Bubba, that was Zach Johnson. Zach Johnson was in the top 10 most of the weekend.
Wes, I had a couple ridiculous losing bets. I also had a couple ridiculous winning bets. First of all, my Steven Yeager, top German, with Bernhard Langer actually making that a fight when I had to lay minus 325. Thank God the cut landed where it landed. But then the one of the matchup wins I had, it was Zach Johnson over Max Homa. If you had told me before the Masters that Max Homa was going to shoot what he shot, I would be like, well, clearly I lost that matchup. But no, Zach Johnson, way to go, buddy.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of these former champions played well. Bubba Watson, we mentioned earlier, of course. Like I said, Willett finished eighth here, ninth at Torrey Pines earlier this year. So he's trying to show the flashes of kind of at least getting somewhat back to form. His career has kind of been really derailed by injuries, shoulder and back issues, but still out there grinding. And, you know, we saw Matt Wallace, another Englishman, win this event a couple years ago, by the way, Wallace in this field once again. So Danny Willett, 125-1. I did not go as deep. It just kind of in time and the fact that, look, this is a crapshoot type event, I think. And, you know, you got to have the guy that's going to get hot. Some other notables in the field this week. Ryan Fox is here. Seamus Power is here. I almost played Aldrich Pottgieter, who I lost on in the playoff in Mexico to Brian Campbell, did not. Eric Von Rooyen in this field, Joe Damon in this field, guys that have won these alternate events or in Van Rooyen's case, won in Mexico a couple years ago. Grayson Sigg has a decent history here, a couple top 10s. So just throwing some names out there. But I just went with five on the outrights.
All right, I like it. Yeah, Sig, man, he's really popped a couple times this year for me. But, okay, I think I'm going to play Toasty so I don't miss out on that one.
Well, I knew you were gonna do that once I mentioned that name. I was like, he's got to bet him.
I didn't do any work for this tournament, so I'm just going to tail Wes on Toasty, and I'm going to bet Alex Smalley regardless. So I'm just going to make two outright bets for me. Alex Smalley, man, the stats have been so good this year. I bet him so much, might as well throw one more bet at him. At Corrales Punta Cana, see if we can get that home on a shorter shot. So I think those will be my two. I'll just bet two outright, see if one of those guys can get it home. Okay, great. Let's see. We went over the Masters. We went over the RBC Heritage. We went over Corrales Punta Cana. Anything else we missed on this week's exciting world of golf, Wes?
I don't believe we did, but I may make a couple bets for the Volvo China Open on the DP World Tour. No write-up this week, but may end up betting that, at least a couple of those, as we start to get more frequent European Tour events.
All right. Well, sounds good. Well, once again, Wes will have all his write-ups over at VSiN.com. All our plays will be there as well. Mine are up there already. Thanks for listening. Make sure to hit those likes, 5 stars, reviews. If you hate the podcast, just tweet at me separately. That's fine. You can say whatever you want to me on Twitter. That's completely cool. For Wes, I'm Kelly. We'll talk to you soon.